It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you guys here. I'm excited to have you guys here. I think that you guys are going to be in for a real treat. With me today is Chuck Troutman. Chuck Troutman is a gentleman I've gotten to know the last few months, and him and the Arizona Marketing Association. We're going to be talking more about we're going to be talking with Chuck and learning more about the Marketing Association, the Arizona Marketing Association, and some of the things that you can learn there shortly. But I wanted to talk about this. I wanted to talk real quickly, hats off to Richard Simmons. Richard Simmons, who kind of retired unofficially, and you know, his brand is all about fitness, and really, he's just a very cheerful guy. So you kind of have to be a jerk not to, you know, to go after somebody like Richard Simmons, who's really done nothing but promote health and tolerance and all that other good stuff. And so he kind of retired, like I said, unofficially a couple of 2 or 3 years ago. And then the Inquirer started blasting out all these untrue stories. And so Richard Simmons said, enough is enough. You know, and so he is suing that. I'm always, what do you call it? I get a little giddy when people stand up for themselves. And, you know, in this case, you have the David going after the Goliath. Why is this important? Well, because you got to protect your brand. Look, you spend all this time and energy building your brand. People become aware of you by what you do and say and all that other stuff. And so it's important that if somebody comes after your brand, that you are mindful of it, right? That you protect it. And sometimes there's not a whole lot you can do, but a lot of times the entire thing is in your hand, right? And so that's all that. Hats off to Richard Simmons for taking on the Inquirer, which is a fairly substantial, company. And then also, on a slightly different topic, good news for those who follow Jimmy Kimmel Live. Jimmy Kimmel, his son was in the hospital. He's got an infant son who had heart surgery, and he spoke out about how being in one of the greatest countries in the world, if not the greatest country in the world, that we should have some kind of united healthcare, nationalized healthcare, some kind of so where individuals like his son will not be discriminated against because they have a pre-existing condition, and that as that somebody, especially a child, should not be turned away because of their inability to pay. They should at least be allowed to be treated. So anyway, kind of enough of that, right? Let's get into the heart of it. And I want to bring on my first guest, Chuck Troutman. Chuck has been on the show multiple times. He's a regular contributor. And usually it's him and Blaine Elkers, but Blaine is absent today. Chuck is a U.S. Marine Vietnam vet who was honorably discharged at the rank of sergeant. After a short stint in corporate America, he realized his true calling was to be an entrepreneur. He's owned and built several multi-million dollar businesses, including an automotive parts business. He grew a company from $25 million in sales, and a retail golf equipment business he grew from scratch to over $10 million a year in sales. Always good to have him on the show. Chuck Troutman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, good morning, Bert. Good to be with you as always. A couple comments about Gene Simmons and about Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, I think that protecting your brand is someone trying to steal your brand is almost like them trying to steal your wife. You know what I mean? That's where you really need to stand up, because we are our brands in most cases. So I applaud Gene Simmons as well. Probably debate Jimmy Kimmel a little bit, because, I don't know why all the late night talk show hosts think that the president of the United States, regardless of whose it is, they don't respect the office. They go after the president, whoever it is, whether it was Obama or whether it was Bush or now it's Trump. I mean, I like to see a little respect for the office.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I'm always respectful of the office. Look, it is a tremendous amount of work. There's nothing wrong with respecting the office. There's nothing wrong with addressing the president as Mr. President, whether or not you disagree with them. And I think that it's also I think it tells a lot about somebody when they don't address the office. And I'm not just talking about the president, but, since we're talking about the president, it's a good place to start. But look, if you're a judge, you have to respect the office of being a judge. You have to respect the office of senator or congressman or congressperson. And these are difficult things to live up to. It's a difficult choice. Becoming president is not something that's easy. Very, very much like being a police officer, Chuck, you're only making about 50% of the people happy, and they're always constantly criticizing you and telling you how you can do the job better, even though most people don't have the balls to ever run for any office, and a lot of people don't even vote. So I agree with what you're saying. We must respect the office.
I agree with that, and also I hate to see any politician's family brought into the fray. They're not the office. You shouldn't be political people's wives or children or anything. So anyway, enough about that. You want to talk about some marketing?
Yeah, let's help some people out with some marketing. I want to jump right into this, and I wanted to talk about why is it more effective, more important to lead with a valuation proposition rather than a product proposition.
Yeah, I mean, the important part about that is that people came to the website or landing page in this particular case looking for a problem to be solved. So you can put the product out there first, but then it's just far more important to solve their problem, to show what the value is for you in the product. If you are going to someone's website because you have severe migraines, you don't want to hear all about the pill first. You want to hear about why your solution will cure their migraine headaches, for instance, and that would be the value proposition.
Right, because ultimately it's all about the why. I mean, why should I do business with this person versus that person? And if you cannot justify the proposition, if you don't have value there, they're going to move on.
Exactly. You have to articulate what your value is to them, because they came there with a problem. And if you don't show that you can solve that problem, almost immediately they're on to the next possible solution for them.
Yeah, and I like what you said, that, and I hope people picked up on that. Almost immediately, you have to be able to show that. We've heard that people have 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 7 seconds. I've heard as many as 9 seconds. Bottom line is, you have just a few seconds to catch somebody's attention with your value proposition so you can have, an intelligent conversation to see if you can help this person or not.
Exactly right.
Let's talk about this. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You're asking me questions. I'm sorry I butted in.
So I want to talk about content, specifically, how companies are using personalized content to increase conversions. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Again, you know, we're all people, and so we need to be marketed to as people. So when we're showing content to people about with our value population proposition and about our solution for their problems, telling stories about that are vitally important to make it interesting and intriguing and all of those kinds of things. You know, there's tools out there we can all use to find those stories. Obviously, the big one is Big Brother Google. That's the obviously the biggest one that we can be putting out there. But many places we can go to get that personalized content. If we're trying to solve a problem, we should do a little research and not just blather on, but do a little research about what we're doing. Bert, have I lost you? Bert, we having some technical difficulties?
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay.
Sounds
so,
like
yeah,
we had a little technical difficulty there.
Yeah, a little glitch there. The engineer is trying to figure out my mic here, and so it's causing a little bit of a challenge. But okay, so the question I was going
to
ask
right,
you.
What hurt to me, like Bert, what I heard, Bert, when we had that little glitch is I thought we had a mouse singing rap. Sounded like a little mouse singing rap through the headset. So I'm sure the other listeners got that too. It wasn't bad rap though for a mouse, you know.
That's funny. Anyway, so before the mouse so rudely interrupted us, I was going to ask you, okay, content is so important. Personalized content is so important. Do you have some favorite tools that you like to use to personalize content?
Well, I mean, the first one is the granddaddy of them all. It's Google, because you can find, you know, if you don't have stories of your own, you can find stories about the solution by Googling what the problem is, and you'll find some stories. The second one that people might not think of is Amazon, because Amazon, although it's a place to buy, is a huge search engine as well. So if you search on Amazon for the solution that you're trying to help somebody with, you will see some of the books that pertain to that and some reviews, and you can grab a couple pages, you know, look at some of the pages in there. So those are a couple of them as well. And then beyond that, I mean, you're a big video fan, Bert, and you use it well. So YouTube, I mean, it's the second largest search engine. So you can also search for those stories on YouTube, particularly if you're going to have some video content that you want to share with people. So those are three big ones that are pretty good.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you have any suggestions or any thoughts as to, you know, should you publish content daily, weekly, monthly? What's your take on that?
Well, I'll give two takes on that. I mean, you know, one of my mentors is Dan Kennedy, and Dan's beliefs are is you can't have too many touches, because people, if you look at your open rates on your emails, if you're getting 20% open rates on your emails, that's one out of five. Now, you know, we know that some of the tricks are you send the same email the next day and just change the subject line, and you'll get another 20%. It'll be different people that were caught by your subject line. So that said, I do think that is overkill, but I think you need to touch your prospects and your clients even 15 to 20 times a month in one of several ways. Obviously with email marketing, maybe a postcard with a newsletter, things like that, but multiple touches so you're never out of sight, out of mind. And particularly if you're using a lot of emails, know that the open rates are slow, so you may think you're killing them by sending them 15 emails in a month, but they probably are only going to see six or seven of them. And let me ask you a question, Bert. You get hundreds of emails a day. How many do you never open because the time is wrong, the subject line didn't get you, whatever? It's a high percentage, isn't it?
It is. It's an extremely high percentage. And the other what do you call it? The other challenge for people you know, I know that I do this and a lot of people do this, is you'll see a subject line. You're saying, hey, that looks like a pretty good email. I want to read that email from Chuck. So let me open that later. And then I never get to it.
Exactly. Exactly. So the same email could be sent to you the next day with a different subject line. And if that subject line is more compelling than the first one for you, not that it wasn't to somebody else, but for you, you may open it and read it now because it spoke to you at the moment. So, that is a good tip for people. You can take the same email and send it a couple times just by changing the subject line, and many people will never know that you did that because they read one or the other, but not both.
Right. And I also want to emphasize what you said, to reach out and contact and touch your clients 15, 20 times a month sounds like maybe a lot, but again, keep in mind that if you have 10,000 people that you're trying to reach, and I guarantee you that if you are tracking your results between email, postcard, even telephone, you're not going to reach everybody. As much as you want, you know, maybe if you do all of those, telephone, postcard, and an email, you might reach at the most 70%. That's 30% that are going to be difficult to reach. They're on vacation. They're in the process of moving. They're doing something else. It just, there's all these different things that happen that make it difficult to reach that person at that time.
Well, you're exactly right. And, you know, the multiple touches also. I mean, if you're sending 20 touches a month and maybe 10 of them are email, but you have maybe a blog post a week, so there's four more, and that's a touch. And you have a postcard, and that's a touch. Let me ask you another question about direct mail. I mean, someone sends you a personal letter, you open the envelope and you at least get it, unlike a leading email. So, I mean, like 95% of letters get open unless they scream junk mail, as opposed to if you're good, 20%. Of emails. So all those multiple ways, a video, a newsletter, and all the things I talked about before, you get your 20 in there, maybe only 10 of them are emails and 10 of them are other touches, but they are touches.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's why it's crucial. If you're under the false belief that you're, quote, bugging your clients, it's completely false. It's untrue. Very few of your clients will see the same email over and over again. And even if they do, there's a way, of course, of segmenting your list if you're using email. But even if they do, to me, I love it when somebody says, Bert, you've sent me this twice. It gives me a chance to interact with them. Hey, Chuck, it's been a long time. I'm glad to hear from you. Sorry that you got it twice, but I want to make sure that everybody got that message. You know, let me know if I can help you. It's just it's another way to start a conversation. It's a deeper touch point because they contacted you. Now you're responding to that contact. So all of those things to me are pluses. And then if by chance somebody unsubscribes, I'm okay with that too, because there's literally millions of people out there that you can help.
Exactly right.
All right. Okay, so moving on, I want to talk about this a little bit. We're still talking about content, but I want to ask you this. I want to talk about mobile devices, people who are accessing your content or your website using from a mobile device. Do you know how many customers access sites from a mobile device by chance?
Yeah, the number is 53% right now, and it's going up almost daily as the screens on the phones have gotten bigger and more people have mobilized their sites. I mean, you know, there was an article in the USA Today this week about the huge number of people who no longer have a home telephone because their mobile device fulfills that need for them. So very, very important. So you need to be sure that your landing page functions on a mobile device. People are making, even though they may make the final pull to trigger on a purchase on their desktop or laptop, they're doing most of the research on their mobile phone when they're at lunch, when they're allegedly working, when they're on coffee break, when they're in front of the TV set. They're researching things, and then they make their decisions, and they may pull the trigger right there on the landing page, or many times they will go to the laptop or desktop. But extremely important for everyone to make sure. Look at your landing page. If someone builds a landing page for you or you build one, go to that landing page on your phone and be sure that it is very, very functional. Otherwise, people will abandon your site or your landing page and go on to the next one.
Right. And just to clarify, when you're saying landing page, that could be the home page on your website. It could be a specific page that you're sending traffic to. I love the tip of verifying what it looks on, not just your mobile phone, but maybe your tablet as well. And if you have an iPad, maybe check it on a Kindle as well. Because, again, you have just a few minutes to capture attention and hold their attention and get them to the next page. So I just wanted to clarify that about the landing page. Is that what, you know, it's any page you're driving traffic to, right?
Well, that's true. But if you have an offer, you should have a separate landing page. If you have an offer for, back to the example of the migraine headaches, if you have an offer for something that will cure a migraine headache, you should not send them to your home page where they can go down the rabbit hole and see everything you have. They are looking for a solution to a problem, so you should create a landing page that specifically solves that problem for them, and that problem only. You can send them to your general website at the bottom of your landing page, but when they first go to your landing page, they want to see the solution of the problem. If you're using any kind of banner advertising, the landing pages should also look like the banner ad you created so that people know they got to the right place. If you have a green banner ad and you send them to an orange landing page, there's immediate disconnect. What the hell? I must be on the wrong page, right? So landing page creation, even graphically, needs to mirror however you're driving them to the landing page if you're doing it with banner ads or ad injections of any kind. If you're doing it from an email template, again, the landing page, if you have a template with graphics on it, the landing page should mirror those graphics. And then it's okay for you to say at the bottom of the landing page, after you've explained your offer and given them the chance to buy or to opt in, whatever, then you can say, for more help, go to our main website at and give the homepage address.
Right. And you know, I love this idea. So, yeah, again, if you're making a specific offer, you want to send them to a specific page. Absolutely. You're going to get the best results. It's definitely 10 times more trackable than sending them. Last thing you want to do is send them to your homepage where, as you said, they're going to get lost and go down the rabbit hole. Let me ask you this. I want to talk about your thoughts on long or short-term or short copy type landing pages. Do you have any idea which landing pages are more successful for a business? Is it the long version copy or the short version copy? Any thoughts?
Well, you know, there's a huge debate about that in sales letters as well as in web pages and landing pages. And on sales letters, that the studies have shown that long pages sell more merchandise than short ones because people really interested in buying the product want to know all they can to make that buying decision. Now, if you're, and as far as landing pages go, if you're selling a widget that is very, very simple, I mean, a landing page should be a page. It shouldn't be on and go pages and pages and pages. But if you're selling something that is very complicated, you need to let them know everything you can to make that buying decision. So the answer is it depends on what you are selling, about how long the copy should be on your landing page. You can't have them see all that text and bail because they're too much text if you're selling an item for $9.99. But if you're selling an item for $9,999, I bet they want to know a little more information. So don't be afraid to share that additional information. And of course, in any good copywriting strategies, if you have a long landing page or a lot of copy on your landing page, it certainly needs to be broken up with headlines and subheadlines and bullet points and photos and videos just to make it less daunting when someone goes there. No one wants to go to a page and see nothing but pages and pages of text.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the distinction you made between if you're selling a $9.99 widget versus a $9,999 service or product, you're going to need a little bit more copy. I've also done some, follow Dan Kennedy and and read some of his books. I remember he talks about one of the biggest, the best converting ads that the Wall Street Journal had, and it was a direct mail piece, and it was like 4 pages long. And at that time, I think they were selling a $200 subscription. And it took them like, I think that Dan Kennedy had done some research, and they had researched, and he had found out that it had taken them 2 years before they had gotten this ad copy dialed in perfectly. And once they got it dialed in perfectly, they kept it for like the last 30 years.
Yeah, and that particular sales letter for the Wall Street Journal, and they were telling a story about two men and their past path of success, and of course, and so they needed that much room to tell the story, but it was a very effective story as they told and sold millions of dollars of subscriptions for them.
Yeah, absolutely, and I just wanted to talk about the fact that hey, it was a couple $100 and had 4 pages in course. Just because your product is $2,000 doesn't mean you need 8 pages. You might be able to tell the same story in 4 pages. But the point of that is that they experimented for 2 years before they found the right one. And, you know, so sometimes, you know, it may take you, and I think, Chuck, you and I have talked about this, even when creating a headline, you might spend 3 or 4 or 5 hours, 3 or 4 or 5 days coming up with the best headline. And then once you come up with the best headline, you start testing it anyway.
You're exactly right. I mean, a good sales letter or even web page, I mean, you should write down minimum of 50 different headlines. And then you mix and match words from those 50 headlines to find the perfect one. And then some of the ones that finish 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 on your list can either be tested as a new headline or they can be used as subheads throughout your sales letter. Because, you know, like anything else, the headline on a sales letter or the subject line on an email is the most important first step to get someone to actually look at what you're doing.
Yeah, and I want to ask you this question, then I want to move on to something else. You know, I'm under the belief that, you know, that headline, that subject line in your email, the headline in your ad copy or in your direct mail piece, you know, is about 80% of your success. You know, so if you have a good subject line, they're going to open that email. If you have a good headline, they're going to read further. But if you don't have a good headline to begin with, it's dead on arrival.
You're exactly right. You could be giving away a Rolls Royce for free in the bottom of your email, but if you have a crappy subject line, no one knows they can get a Rolls Royce for free because they did not open it. They moved on, hit the delete button, and moved on.
Yes, yes, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about this. I want to talk about the importance of you know, why you should market to the not ready to buy yet prospects. A lot of people will tell you no, and they don't mean no. They really mean no right now, and sometimes they tell you that via email or verbally, or they might be telling you that because they're not opening your emails or responding to your emails. They're not ready to buy yet. And so let's talk about this. Why do you think it's important to market to this not ready to buy crowd?
Well, first of all, on any given day, that whatever your offer is, there's less than 3% of the people out there that are looking for your offer today. Now, if they found you through pay-per-click, maybe they're looking for a solution. But in general, today, about 3% are going to pull their credit card out or write you a check for your product. The other 97% could be, like you say, today's not the day, but they really want to buy it in the next year. That's a percentage. And then far more than half aren't going to make that purchase even in a year, but they do want it. So for a marketer, the worst thing we can hear is maybe. You know, maybe is not a good word. No is a much better word because now we can adjust our marketing efforts toward the no. But maybe, what do you say? You know, you can't go back and hammer away as much because they said maybe. So
hate
that thing. But also in helping people in that undecided category make decisions is let your stories and your current customers and your current successes do the talking. for you. You know, I can say that the Arizona Marketing Association is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Everybody should join, but that has nowhere near the impact that if you say that, hey, the Arizona Marketing Association has been great for me, I think you'd get great benefit, you should join. That's far stronger than me saying it because it's third-party validation. Another thing going on in the industry right now, as far as testimonials go, is we marketers, we all understand testimonials, and we like testimonials and like to gather testimonials. But right now, our consumer prospects are used to looking at reviews. You can take the exact same word said about you and call it a testimonial or a review, and they feel much stronger about a good review than the same exact thing called a testimonial. So I'm encouraging people right now to not use testimonial. I got five testimonials. No, you got five reviews. They're the same thing. If you say nice things about me, Bert, you're reviewing me, right? And because of Yelp and Google Plus and all those services, they're asking for reviews. The consumer now is conditioned to look for good reviews, but not good testimonials. So that's a big one out there. If the audience didn't get that.
No, I love that.
That's
love
a writer downer for sure.
Yeah, that is a writer downer for sure. So this giant shift from testimonials to reviews is a giant shift in the way people are processing that. And you literally have a whole generation of buyers that are trained on reviews and are not paying attention to testimonials. So I love that. That little nuance, that little change can mean massive impact on your business.
Exactly. I mean, anybody who's given you a testimonial, you can just change that to review, and you can. The same word said, but what you call it is a game changer for business people right now.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that so much. And man, I hope that people are taking note because that is such an important distinction. And you can send out a headline today that says, hey, I have these great five testimonials. Probably nobody will open it. But hey, check out these five reviews I just got. And I guarantee you, you're going to get a much higher open rate just on that alone. Let's talk about
exactly. Check out my latest five star reviews. Boy, that's impactful. Check out my latest testimonials. Yeah, right. That's just you ask people to say good things about you. Huge difference.
Yeah, huge difference. All right, so I want to talk about this. Back to really the I think the overall message that we've been talking about today, which has been quite a bit headlines and ad copies and stuff like that. I want to talk to you specifically about creating an irresistible lead magnet for your business. Have you ever created an irresistible lead magnet for your business as a way of getting people involved in the Arizona Marketing Association or in any other business?
We have on the Arizona Marketing Association, one of our biggest irresistible lead magnets is the dollar trial. You know, for $1, you get behind the scenes and get a 30-day membership in our association. And with that comes, you know, 55 months worth of content that we share in our live events on this coming one coming up this tomorrow, in fact. But then people for $1 can get like millions of dollars of ideas. So why wouldn't they check it out? So that's an irresistible offer. You know, free is the most famous word in marketing. So if you can give something away free as an irresistible offer, it's fantastic. Take, for instance, an automotive repair shop. They're out there and they're competing. The competition is fierce, right? They're going to have to compete with $19.95 oil changes, you know, anyway, and they're going to basically break even or lose money on those. So why not give a free oil change as your irresistible offer for the first time? You will get people in your shop, and then you have the opportunity to look the car over and probably find, when you're doing your 50-point safety check or whatever you do, you're probably going to find some other things they need, because unless the car is brand new or less than a year old, there's going to be something wrong with it. So that's your irresistible lead magnet. You got someone to come in for your free oil change, and while they were there, the oil change was free, but you find they needed something, maybe even as simple as new wiper blades. God knows in Arizona, our wiper blades don't last 6 months whether it rains or not because the sun bakes them, right?
Right.
I mean, what else do they find on there? They find out that they take a look and they see that the brakes are close to being needing replaced. They find something wrong with the suspension, McPherson struts or shock absorbers. Anyway, for instead of complaining about, gee, I got to do this for $19.95 to be competitive and it's costing me $20 in supplies plus the labor to do it, happily give it away for free. And of course, like any other marketing thing, you have to measure it. If you live in a community that everybody takes the free thing and never buys anything else, you have to rethink that. And I've got a story about that, Bert. Long ago, I had an auto parts store, had several of them. I had one in Salem, Oregon, notoriously I'll just say it like it is, a cheap town. It's the state capital of Oregon's there and a bunch of bargain hunters and blah, blah, blah. So antifreeze at that time was about $6 a gallon, and you got to have antifreeze in Oregon in the wintertime. So I bought a truckload of it, and I paid like $3 a gallon for it, and I sold it for $1.99 4-gallon limit. We had more traffic than you would ever believe. We had hundreds of people coming in to buy our antifreeze for $1.99. But guess what? Our average sale was slightly more than what 2 gallons of antifreeze would cost that day. They came in and spent their $3.98 for the 2 gallons of antifreeze. And maybe they bought a couple of hose clamps, but they didn't buy hoses or fan belts or anything. And after the sale, these did not become people who continued to come back to us. It was a one-and-done deal. So you got to test. That's the point I'm trying to make here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I cannot say that enough. You have to test and measure. Look, bottom line is, the reason that free works so well, and this is so funny, you know, that free is such an important word in our society. I have a couple of kids still at home, and until recently, they didn't pay for a whole lot. But now they're 16 and they're working and they're paying, they're helping pay for their iPhone and stuff like that. But prior to that, they also would come up to me and say, "Hey, Dad, IHOP is having this thing where kids eat for free. We should go to IHOP." I said, "Honey, you know, I appreciate you looking out for me, but you don't pay for it. You know, when we go out to eat, you don't pay anyway." But yet my kids, who were at that time, 15, almost 16 years old, they still knew the value of free enough so that it would motivate them to tell me and their mom that, hey, we should go do this because they're having this free offer. And again, kids, even kids that aren't paying for anything, understand the value of free because it doesn't happen a lot.
That's right.
It's just so funny. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for our audience out there, just be when you're making an offer, it truly has to be irresistible. That's the biggest point to make. Whether it's free or whether it's an unbelievable price, there's so much competition out there to get away from the clutter. Your offer has to be irresistible. And of course, with an irresistible offer, you need to be thinking about your sales funnel and how you're going to upsell or cross-sell or have add-on sales to that irresistible offer to get people in. We have a client here locally in town in the spa business, and she gives free laser hair removal as one of her offers for a small area. But when people come in, these are new clients, and when they come in, she's converting them literally since the first of the year, over 150 of them, to a monthly continuity program for services. So that free that she's giving got people that she'd never seen before in her spa. Now she has 150 new customers seeing her on a monthly basis and growing. And that's the idea of an irresistible offer.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And how do you know if you have an irresistible offer? Well, the easiest way is if people are responding in a positive way. So I'll give you an example of something that's not irresistible. 10% off is not irresistible. Now, maybe $100 off might be a little bit better. So if you're giving somebody $100 off of a $1,000 widget, that might be slightly better, but let me tell you, irresistible, it really has to be tantalizing because there is so much competition. People are so busy and distracted. So if it's not just a ridiculous deal, then You have to come up with some other way of being creative. And like Chuck said, look, it's about getting people in your door so they can get to know, like, and trust you. So isn't it worth giving away something that might have a value of $20 or $30 and getting them in the door and building that relationship and maybe getting them to come to you 3 or 4 or 5 times a year or maybe every month? It's totally worth it, and it's sometimes the cheapest way to grow your business. And if you want to have, if you want to find out other ideas, Chuck, don't you think that the Arizona Marketing Association would be a great place for to help people who want to know how to build irresistible offers?
Well, I sure think it would be. In fact, I know it is. We have, in fact, in our, like I said, on the dollar trial, back in our archives, we have summits about that. And we, on the one we're having tomorrow night, we have some great stuff going on too. I'll be talking about what we're talking about again right now in a little more depth, and Blaine's doing the thing on how to use different ways to build your business through study clubs or book clubs to bring in prospects coming in for that bait, if you will, said seriously, not you know, facetiously, that bait, and it might be that you're running a book club or a study club on some topic, and now you become closer to your prospect or customer. One of our members, like you spoke at our event last month, Bert, you did a great job. Jerry Levinson, one of our members, will be speaking for about 10 or 15 minute segment tomorrow night about how to make yourself you know, irresistible, not the offer, but yourself, to make yourself special in the eyes of people, and to actually name things that you do, put a name on it that is your own creative name that you get known for. So I'm very excited about the summit tomorrow night. And then our last little thing we're going to do, we're encouraging everybody to hold up their phones one time during the meeting, and we're going to see what special apps are on those phones and try to compile a list of apps that people are using to streamline or to be more effective in their business. And of course, we have a bunch of them, but we're looking for some new one, and we'll put that list together and share it with anybody who is attending tomorrow night and our members as well. Now, if you'd like to come tomorrow night and want to check us out for free, there's two ways to do it. If you say, hell, I want to join for a buck and see everything you have, you can do that by going tryazma.com. If you'd like to just check us out without spending the dollar, then you can go to azmaguest.com and put in the referred by, put in Bert, and you'll have a free guest pass to our event tomorrow night. We do what we call a Munch and Mingle at 6:30. It's at Rio Salado College Conference Center, and the Munch and Mingle is a light dinner and a networking portion of our event, and from 7 to 9 is pure content and table discussions. And I think you'll attest to this, Bert, we have fun. It's not all classroom Professor Troutman and Professor Elkers. We have fun. So
it is a lot of fun.
Check us out.
It's a lot of fun. You get to meet like-minded people. And you know what? Here's the thing a lot of us who are in business tend to feel as though we're in business by ourselves. You know, there's nobody that we can turn to. You know, if your business is struggling, sometimes you want to share that information, but it's difficult to share that. Who do you share that with? Do you share that with your spouse? Maybe no, maybe not. Do you share it with your employees? Again, maybe not. What if you could go to a place that was safe, like the Arizona Marketing Association, and say, hey, Chuck, I'm struggling with this. What are your suggestions? And you have not only Chuck or Blaine, but you have maybe 30 people that can give you ideas and point you in the right direction, and maybe get your business right on track. The value of that is priceless. You know, the value of saving your business, the value of expanding your business, the value of giving you peace of mind, of having fellowship of other like-minded people, literally is priceless. And the Arizona Marketing Association is a ridiculous, ridiculous offer. Every time, not only is it fun, not only is it educational, but dinner is served as well. I know from what I can see, you guys lose money every time you put on one of these Arizona Marketing Association summits between the value that you give and the food that you provide. And give out that website one more time. It's AZMA Guest.
That's right. AZMAGUEST.com. AZMAGuest.com. And you're right. This is our summits are not a profit center. They are a loss leader. But what they know from the business side, what they do from us is that people come, they like what they see, and they join the association and become our clients. And so it, in the long run, it is a profitable program to do. But on a if I just measured the ROI on a Wednesday night, I would say, holy crap, what am I doing this for? You know. But fortunately, we measure ROI on a monthly basis.
Well, you know what, and this is something else. Back to the, you know, talking about the irresistible offer, talking about doing stuff for free, or in this case, is you know, trying to build that look, not like, know, and trust. This does all of that, right? You're letting people come in to completely risk-free. You're feeding them a good meal. You're feeding their business. You're feeding them physically as well as mentally. And they get to try it out. They get to meet you. They get to meet Blaine. They get to meet the, you know, the almost 100 people that show up every month. And they get to see that what we're talking about. So this is a great example of walking the talk. You have this irresistible offer. And it's a way simply for people to get to know, like, and trust you guys. And this is also a way to build your brand. It's also a way to build authority. It's also a way to build goodwill. This is a great example of that.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing we do is that I firmly believe you have to repel to attract, because what we do is not for everybody. So I'm not afraid that people come down and say, wow, this is not what I thought it was. I thought it was going to be a traditional networking event. Well, no, that's not us. We have a networking segment. But if you're looking for a traditional two-hour networking event where you exchange business cards with 45 people you'll never see again, we're not that. But if that's what you're looking for, we will repel you. You won't want to be part of us, and that's okay too. We're looking for people who really want to grow their business and be successful and learn to master direct response marketing. And if they so choose to join our high impact break all barrier mastermind groups to move fast. That's what we're looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chuck, it's been so much fun having you on the show again. Chuck Troutman, he is the you're the chairman. I forget your exact title. You're the chairman of the Arizona
I'm the CEO and founder, and Blaine
CEO
is the president.
That's what it was. Thank you. CEO and founder.
I got white hair, but I'm not. I'm sorry, bro. See, I have white hair, but I don't feel old enough to be a chairman yet, so I just want to be the CEO.
Yes, sir. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Chuck, always good to have you on the show. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night at the Arizona Marketing Association there at Rio Salado College for you guys who are in the Phoenix, Scottsdale, Mesa metro area. Just come out there, say hello. And if you want to check us out, you can go to azmaguest.com and fill out the form. It's free. There's no risk on your part. Just put on there, Bert Martinez referred you, or Money for Lunch, or Radio referred you, and you're going to be taken care of. You'll get to have dinner with Chuck and I and a bunch of other people, and you can come over and shake our hand. And we'll be glad to meet you in person. So, Chuck, we'll see you tomorrow night, my friend.
Perfect. Thanks, Bert. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night, too. Good show today. Thank you.
You bet. Good stuff there about you and your business from Chuck Troutman, the CEO and founder of the Arizona Marketing Association. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Speaking of the Arizona Marketing Association, my next guest is a referral from the Arizona Marketing Association. David Burns is going to join us. And David Burns is the owner of Green ID. And the great thing about doing a live show is that sometimes things don't go according to plan. And so I don't have a lot of information, but I'm excited to talk to Dave. Dave, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet, you bet. All right, so let's jump into this. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then tell us a little bit about Green ID.
Sure. So we are a contracting company in Phoenix that does home energy audits and home performance upgrades. All residential homes, we go in a home to test it. We'll sell energy efficiency upgrades like insulation, new heating and cooling systems, and then we'll actually do the install work. I was trained as a bioengineer and ditched that profession, went to start this construction company, and haven't looked back ever since, about 8 years ago.
Gotcha, gotcha. And so your background was in construction, and what led you to having this green energy audit company? You know, what was the moment that you said, hey, this is the direction I need to go?
It was a kind of a perfect storm. I always liked working with my hands and tinkering with things. And so there was that aspect. And then the energy audit side is technical enough to satisfy kind of my engineering side. And in 2007, 2008, when the economy tanked, there was a weatherization kind of revitalization in the industry. And so the utility companies were pushing energy efficiency for homeowners to save money on their bills. They were giving incentives and rebates to make their homes more efficient. And I kind of jumped on that bandwagon and said, this is the direction we're going to go. And we've kind of started small and then grown steadily every year.
All right, so let's talk about this. When it comes to the minor, you know, improvements, I mean, you know, things like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about things like what, insulation? We're talking about maybe, you know, changing your windows, which, of course, windows is not necessarily a minor thing. What are some of the other things that you guys do to help upgrade a home and to make it more efficient?
Sure. So after we test the home, typical recommendations would be duct sealing is a good ROI for a homeowner, just repairing all the connections in the ductwork where every time the air or heat turns on, it's being lost basically into the attic. In our homes in Phoenix, most of the ductwork is in the attic, so it's literally being thrown out the window or, you know, outside every time the heating and cooling system comes on. The insulation is a big one. Making efficiency improvements to the heating and cooling system themselves can have good payback. Things like just Nest thermostats, the kind of cool technology out there. You know, people latch onto that. They know what it is, and it kind of anchors the other upgrades. You know, we want to sell a homeowner what they want. Maybe they think they need new windows or they need a new heating and cooling system, but what they actually need is a duct seal or more insulation. And so we kind of package these things in together and make those improvements. And typically a install will take 1 to 2 days, and we're with the homeowner kind of all throughout that process. So it's kind of a couple moving parts. We have kind of our operations is the most challenging, I think, to kind of manage, where we have our initial audit of the house, and that's one kind of group of employees and team members. And then we have our sales team that'll sell the upgrades, and our install team will actually perform the work. And kind of everyone has to be on the same page. We all have to be talking about referrals from day one. and kind of making sure that it's a seamless process for the homeowner. They get what they paid for, and we're there when they need us next or for that next referral.
Yeah, I like that so very much. You know, and this is interesting because I want to talk about, you mentioned the duck work, and most people lose tons of energy and money because of the way the duck work leaks out. And so what kind of ROI do you typically get by just going in there and fine-tuning the duck work? Is it a one-on-one return, a three-on-one return?
Yeah, it's probably going to be about a 30% return on investment. So if you think of the stock market, yeah, a typical ROI, you're going to be ecstatic with a 10% ROI. This is even more than that. So, you know, when homeowners put in a dollar to seal up their ductwork, they're getting, you know, multiples back from the energy and the money that's saved. And so it's a good investment, makes sense, and it increases the comfort of the house as well.
Sure, sure. Especially if you're in a situation like we are where, again, here in the great state of Arizona, 110-degree weather is not uncommon. Having 90 degrees at night is very common. Mm-hmm. And so having your home efficient is going to not only save you money, but as you said, it's going to keep you very comfortable. And again, we're all spoiled and we like to have our comfort and we like to have it now. You know, one of the things that amazed me, this is my own little story. You know, I think that our electric bill was like $600 a month, which again, you know, this is during the summer month, we're paying $600 or a little bit more, maybe $650. Depending on how hot it was that month. But, you know, and that could be a fairly, good chunk of money. So I called up the electric company just to be curious. I called them up. I said, hey, do you guys by chance have any ways of reducing this electric bill? And they said, hey, by turning off your turning off your air conditioner. So they call it pre-cooling the house. So you get the house super cold during the morning, and then from 3 o'clock in the afternoon until 6, you shut that AC off, and that will drastically reduce your expense. And sure enough, by doing that, our electric bill during the summer months dropped by almost 50%. That one little strategy from 3 to 6. When there's essentially almost nobody home, that little one drastically improved our efficiency, drastically improved our bottom line. When you start doing other things like taking care of the duct work and maybe replacing an old air conditioner, then it just increases that even more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you really hit a good note on the time of use plan. And it's playing the game where APS or SRP, our utility companies, are charging double the utility rate from 3 to 6 p.m. when it's the hottest part of the day. And if you pre-cool your home, like you said, and just play that game, you could get really good savings. And you definitely want a well-insulated house to pre-cool the home and have that conditioned air stay in the house. You don't want it just kind of leaking out as soon as it gets cold, it gets hot again. We use a rule of thumb of your highest energy bill on an energy efficient home is going to be about $100 per 1,000 square feet. And so you told me you have a $600 high bill before. If your home was energy efficient, I would guess that your home is about 6,000 square feet. I'm assuming that it's not. So I'm probably saying you have around a 3,000, maybe 3,000 to 4,000 square foot home. That would be kind of typical Arizona home. People that have 2,100 square feet should have a high bill about 300 to 400. And then if they make their home energy efficient, expect that bill, your high bill, to go down to around 250, 240. And that's kind of a benchmark that we use to say, well, you know, you're way overspending or something else is going on here. Let's find these smoking guns and test the home, see what's wrong. And by testing it, we put a light on everything, and it kind of dispels any gimmick products that are out there. If a homeowner is thinking of doing replacing the windows or upgrading their AC system or the pool pump, we can actually put all that data into a model and show how much they're going to save for each upgrade. So it gives them like a roadmap on what's the biggest bang for the buck, what's second, third, and what's not worth it. You know, the ROI on windows is going to be 30 plus years. So you're not going to do it to save money alone. You know, for aesthetic reasons, it's also good for soundproofing. It's also good. But if you're just trying to save money, it's probably not the best upgrade.
Yeah, no, I like that. And you know what? You're right. It's right at 4,000 square feet. So it goes to show you know your stuff very well. And it's amazing. Those little things. So, okay. So if windows are not maybe a good place to get your ROI, what about solar energy? You know, here in Arizona, like in parts of California, parts of other places, we get a lot of solar activity. What is your thought on solar energy?
I love solar. I think, you know, especially when you fly into the valley here, we should see solar panels just covering every home.
Yeah.
Because it is a newer, you know, renewable energy source. It's a good investment to make. We kind of have a different view than solar companies. We like solar systems that are smaller and are going to take care of the winter bill only. So your winter bill should go down to zero. And then the summer bill, you'll still have a small summer bill, but those solar panels are going to be working during the hottest part of the day when the AC is cranking, when you're paying double the utility rate, and it's going to take that big bite off of your energy bills. You're still going to pay some, but you're going to get much better ROI on your solar panels by getting a smaller system to just take care of the winter bills. Whereas a solar company will say, let's put as many panels as we can on your roof. Let's go 100%, 200% solar. So the utility company is actually paying you back. And that way I understand that it's really attractive and that you got bragging rights to your neighbors that you're getting money back from the utility company, but they're selling you the utility rate of a wholesale rate. So you're buying maybe 12 cents a kilowatt hour for your electricity, but you're paying APS or SRP are paying you back only 5 cents a kilowatt hour. So
sure, it's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right. And you know what? It is still nice. I mean, I keep playing around with starting an initiative. I think that here in the great state of Arizona, that all new homes should have a certain percentage of solar on new homes. And because it's ridiculous to have all the solar power and not utilize it. It's a shame because, you know, as it is, we could be in a great position as a state to sell our excess power to, and I think we already sell some power to California, but it'd be great to have tons of it. And if we could reduce our need for the grid, I think that would be the way to go. If all our homes could be solar efficient, I think that would be the way to go. It would be a bragging right for the state. And I think it'd be a big help for the consumers. David Burns, we're out of time. A lot of fun having you on the show. I'd love to bring you back another time and talk more about Green ID. What's the best website if people want to find out more about you?
YourGreenID.com, Y-O-U-R,
YourGreenID.com, Y-O-U-R.
Yes, that's right.
YourGreenID.com. David, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Bert.
Good stuff there from David Burns, YourGreenID.com. A lot of helpful information there about how to get your house ready for just being more efficient and what do you call it? More efficient and more comfortable, right? I mean, that's really what it's all about. If you can save money and still, you know, keep your air conditioner at 75 or whatever you like to keep it at, that would be the way to go. As always, we're grateful for you stopping by. We're appreciative of your willingness to help us grow our audience by sharing our audios, by connecting with me on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter, and by subscribing to my YouTube channel. Don't forget my YouTube channel. Go there right now. Subscribe. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday.